Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Judge Bauer, the third member of the panel, isn't able to be here this morning, so he will listen to the arguments because they're recorded. So he will participate in the decision. So our first case for argument is Council versus Village of Dalton. Ms. Holbauer.
Good morning, Your Honors. Miriam Holbauer with LAF on behalf of the appellant, Gardell Council. May it please the court. Mr. Council sought relief in federal court for being wrongfully terminated because he pressed a criminal complaint against a co-worker who happened to be the Dalton Village Administrator's son. The lower court held his claims to be precluded by a finding made by the board of the Department of Employment Security in the context of his application for unemployment benefits, and which was eventually affirmed by the Illinois Appellate Court. That was error. The parties agree, as did the lower court, that Illinois state law governing issue preclusion applies. The Illinois Unemployment Act provides that no finding, determination, decision, ruling, or order issued pursuant to the Act shall be admissible, nor shall it be binding or conclusive, nor shall it constitute res judicata, regardless of whether the same parties or facts are involved. Nonetheless, the district court afforded a finding of the Board of Review, as reinstated by the Illinois Appellate Court, binding and preclusive effect, dismissing Mr. Council's federal complaint as barred by collateral estoppel. So the lower court essentially held that the finding was not one made pursuant to the Act because it had been subject to judicial review under the administrative review law. That was error in light of the plain language of the Act as well as its history and purpose. First, the language of the Act, particularly the phrase pursuant to, is broad. Its broad meaning comprises both the appellate court's decision that affirmed the board and the board's decision that was affirmed in the appellate court's decision. Pursuant to means in compliance with, in accordance with, under, as authorized by, in carrying out, acting or done in consequence or prosecution of anything. Within the meaning of this broad expression, the appellate court was acting pursuant to the Unemployment Act because it issued its decision carrying out and seeking to comply with the Act. It was issuing a decision in accordance with the Unemployment Act. The appellate court actually used the phrase pursuant to the Act, meaning the Unemployment Act, when describing its substantive reasoning because
if the case is remanded, what is it you want to argue in the district court?
If the case is remanded?
Don't you want it remanded?
We want the case remanded so that he can pursue his complaint on the merits.
So that why didn't he? You want it remanded for what?
So that, for trial.
Well, what do you want to, I know, what do you want to show at the trial?
At the trial, you want to know what the facts are of the complaint?
What are you planning to argue at the trial?
At the trial, Mr. Counsel intends to show that he was terminated because he exercised his First Amendment rights. He pressed a complaint against a co-worker who happened to be the village administrator's son. His supervisor threatened that if he continued to press that criminal complaint, he would
be terminated. What is the significance of the fact that he waited so long to get his learner's permit?
It's not significant in his federal complaint.
Why not?
Well, it's not completely insignificant because it would be the pretext that the employer would try to show for his termination. It'd be the purported reason.
No, the employer is not trying to show pretext.
That's what we would predict would happen in the lower court.
Well, the absence of a CDL would preclude him from having the job that he was in, right?
He didn't necessarily need the CDL to do the job that he was doing.
But it was a job requirement. The employer required it.
The employer said that it was a requirement. It's and I believe that that's a fact that was in the appellate court decision that's not to be given preclusive effect. But if we take those facts as true, then he was required to have a commercial driver's license by his union contract. However, that requirement was selectively enforced so that Mr. Counsel could show that it was only enforced against him. He wasn't being required to use a commercial driver's license. He wasn't doing a job that required one, and the employer told him, we would rather
when
have
you say selectively enforced, there are other people employed in that his same job who don't have the license, the commercial driver's license. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Your Honor, what's before this court is whether the district court erred in dismissing on these grounds, collateral estoppel, based on findings made in the Board of Review. That violates the plain language of the Unemployment Act 1900B. The appellate court was acting pursuant to the act when it reviewed the decision of the board, and the board was acting pursuant to the act when it made that decision. And the appellate court was merely reviewing it. It didn't make the findings that were given preclusive effect. Those findings were the findings of the board. All the appellate court did was review the decision of the board, and it did so with deference. So the board's decision in the district courts, and the district court erred in giving the board's decision preclusive effect. Even if we don't reach the, even if the plain language weren't clear, which it is, the history and purpose would dictate that it not be construed to depend upon whether a decision is subject to judicial review. The legislative history reveals that the General Assembly was trying to conform the law with a directive from the United States Department of Labor. That directive said that giving preclusive effect to determinations made in unemployment cases would cause parties to feel the need to address issues in far greater depth in administrative hearings, thus lengthening and complicating the process. The Social Security Act requires that benefits determinations be made quickly. So the Department of Labor believed that affording preclusive effect to determinations made in those proceedings would have the effect of slowing them down. That concern applies whether or not determinations of the board are given preclusive effect at any stage, even if they're only given preclusive effect on review. It's undermined no matter what stage of the process collateral estoppel can be applied. And it suggests that the language pursuant to has to be read broadly. Factual findings can only be made by the board, and either party can seek judicial review. So it's not possible to predict in advance whether a case will be subject to judicial review, so that you never know if the other side is going to appeal. Since it's not possible to predict in advance, litigants are going to be pressured to aggressively develop their factual claims in the administrative proceedings, and that's going to undermine the purpose of the act. Your Honor, for all of these reasons, the district court erred in applying issue preclusion in violation of Section 1900B and dismissing Mr. Counsel's complaint. That decision has to be reversed.
Okay. Thank you, Ms.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Murphy?
May it please the court and opposing counsel, a bit of disclosure. I'm the village attorney, but I have not been on this file. I was kind of pressed into service because the attorney handling the case is unavailable. I want to do one thing right away on behalf of the village, is withdraw this timeliness argument. I've given it my own review. This appeal was timely filed, and so we withdraw that argument, and I'd like the record to reflect that. Judge Posner, to answer your question, the complaint in this case has got a retaliatory discharge, First Amendment. Going a little bit to the merits, whether filing a police report deals with a question of public concern under Connick is a different question. But the key to this case from a factual standpoint is that the appellate court held that this individual, A, knew he had to get the license within the year, B was bound by the collective bargaining agreement, and C intentionally failed to obtain the license, which means that in unemployment comp terminology, he abandoned the job. For purposes of a federal case, that finding would seem to us to have a preclusive effect on the issue of whether there was a legitimate, non-discriminatory reason that gets us past.
Well, Ms. Holbauer says this requirement is not enforced consistently.
That kind of goes to the backup issue that Judge Zagel raised, which is this statute does allow the introduction of that kind of evidence. Now, to be sure, unemployment compensation hearings are high volume. Nevertheless, the statute does allow the introduction of evidence, subpoena of witnesses, and presentation of that sort of evidence. But what Judge Zagel said is that his interpretation of the statute, saying pursuant to this act, gives a claimant a choice. Once you've gone through the administrative process, you make a decision as to whether you want to cross the Rubicon into judicial review. Once you do that, the district court said, you are not acting pursuant to the Unemployment Act, but pursuant to the administrative review law.
So is the opposite true for the employer? If the employer loses on appeal, then is it collateral estoppel against the employer?
If the employer chooses to take it to judicial review, the employer has to take the bitter with the sweet. Now, Your Honor, this was not argued in the briefs, but I just want to raise the issue. What we're dealing with here is actually an interpretation of Illinois statutory law. And to the best of my knowledge, there's no Illinois Supreme Court decision on this case. So this court is being asked to interpret a state statute where there has not been a definitive determination by the Supreme Court. Not raised in the briefs, but my own judgment in terms of a fallback, Your Honors, this would seem to fall within SCR 20, Illinois Supreme Court Rule 20, in terms of a certification issue. Now, I'm here to defend the decision, but I would, as a fallback, I'd ask the court to consider that. I think a couple years ago you did that in Chicago Board of Education case with the teachers union, because the issue there was there a property interest in continued employment.
But what is your answer to Judge Tinder's question? Suppose that in this administrative proceeding, the company had lost. Would that be preclusive in this federal?
If the company took an appeal.
No, this is not my question. If there was this administrative proceeding, suppose the company had lost, and then she brings her Holbauer, on behalf of counsel, brings this federal case, would your loss in the state court system operate as collateral estoppel or res judicata in the federal proceeding?
If based on a finding of retaliatory motive, yes. We would have that door would have to swing both ways in order for res judicata to apply. But in our case, the key fact that would preclude this action was a finding by the Illinois Appellate Court that there was a legitimate reason for this individual not to be no longer employed.
But just to be clear, if it had found an illegitimate reason, that would have the same collateral, that also would have collateral estoppel effect in this case.
I believe that's the inevitable conclusion of the force right. of Judge Zagel's interpretation of the intersection between those two statutes.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about the legislative history, which shows that they didn't want to encumber these administrative proceedings with additional legal arguments and facts and so on that a party might introduce just out of fear of a collateral estoppel effect?
That history is there, but it would seem to me, Your Honor, that focus was on at at the administrative level as opposed to on judicial review.
No, no. The point is, if you're going to have collateral estoppel effect, that raises the stakes in the administrative proceeding. The administrative proceeding is likely to preclude a further suit, and that gives the parties an incentive to put in more evidence in the administrative proceeding. And that slows down the administrative process. So that's the argument. That's the sort of policy argument against your position. So do you have a reply to that?
Yes, my reply to that is that that same statutory structure allows for a party to protect himself or herself.
Yes, the question is whether protection should be required, should be necessary. If there's no collateral estoppel effect, there's less incentive to encumber the administrative proceeding with the sort of evidence that's presented in trials. That's the argument for why your position would gum up the administrative works. And my question, whether you have a response to that.
Yes, my response to that is that not particularly fact-based, but the vast majority of these cases don't involve somebody who also claims that he was discharged in violation of the First Amendment. Therefore, the concern about gumming up the works, I believe, Your Honor, is more theoretical than practical. First of all, in my kind of case, it's a public sector employee, so the First Amendment retaliation claims won't arise. The vast majority of unemployment cases are whether the individual left work voluntarily, was fired. This is a distinct minority of cases where there is an intersection of a constitutional claim with an unemployment claim. So the argument about slowing down the process, I believe, is more theoretical than reality-based.
With respect to the constitutional claim, the retaliation claim here, a mixed motive would be sufficient to get to the jury, wouldn't it? Even if there was a legitimate termination reason, if it was motivated by the illegitimate retaliation, that would be enough to get to the jury, wouldn't it?
It would be enough to get to the jury on the First Amendment issue if it would ultimately be plaintiff's burden under Connick to show pretext. But we now have a finding that a factor is the non-compliance with the licensure requirement. So to get past the but-for test.
If that's only enforced against those who bring complaints against co-workers who happen to be the sons of supervisors and so forth, that makes your case.
But that was something that could have been raised at the administrative proceeding. That sort of defense, and they.
I'm not sure how that's relevant to the workman's comp claim.
Well, unemployment comp on the
unemployment.
It's relevant because the statute allowed that employee to raise the pretext issue, and in fact, the employee stated it in the unemployment hearing. Didn't put on any witnesses, so. That kind of goes back to Judge Posner's question. Had the issue been, vetted lawyer-like, both sides would have been bound on judicial review had the judicial review gone through and a finding been made in that effect. I see my time is up. Thanks, Judge.
It's not yet, but how would they know that going into that hearing in light of the statute? What would have told them that? There's no case that says ignore the statute. Going into the hearing, it seemed like it was a non-preclusive type of result.
As certainly at the administrative procedure, and it's a case of first impression in terms of Illinois law. No Illinois case on this. So in terms of somebody having notice that if I take this administrative review action, I may be stuck, there was no bright line notice for that, and I certainly concede that point because there's no law out there on this issue.
Okay. Now your time is up. The red lights.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Murphy. Ms. Hallbauer, how much time does she have? 2 minutes?
Thank you, Your Honor. I just wanted to respond to a couple of points. First of all, the point that the lower court's decision gives the claimant a choice whether to pursue administrative review or not. First of all, that's not what the statute says. It's not consistent with the statutory language. And it's also not the reality because, as I said before, it's not possible for claimants to predict in advance whether a case is going to end up on judicial review. Secondly, there was no finding of the Illinois Appellate Court. It was the finding of the board that the Illinois Appellate Court reinstated. And thirdly, I'd like to emphasize that there is no way to know going into a hearing, and I believe we've underlined, or the concession is an important one, that there wasn't a way for Mr. Counsel to have known before his hearing that his affirmative employment claims would be litigated in that proceeding and that they would be subject to collateral estoppel effect, and it really underlines the unfairness of what occurred here when Mr. Counsel's complaint was dismissed.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Holbrook. I see there's a notation that this is an informa pauperis.
That's true, Your Honor.
So were you asked by the district judge to handle this, or just?
Oh, no. I work for Legal Assistance Foundation. So
pardon?
I work for Legal Assistance Foundation. We don't charge our clients.
Well, thank you very much for your efforts on behalf of your
client. Thank you.
We thank Mr. Murphy as well.